Welcome to Powering Product Innovation, a podcast from Cognizant's Technology Business Unit, where we partner with industry experts to enable continued innovation in the technology industry.
Welcome to another edition of Powering Product Innovation from Cognizant. I'm your host, Deb Eastman. And in today's episode, we're diving into the cutting edge area of AI technology. I'm joined by Naveen Sharma, Senior Vice President and Global Practice Head of AI and Analytics here at Cognizant. Naveen will be sharing his expertise and insight into navigating this fast-moving landscape and help us explore the dynamic changes brought by Gen AI. So let's get started. Hello, everyone. Deb Eastman here. Happy to have a guest with me today, Naveen Sharma. Naveen leads our AI and analytics practice here at Cognizant and is our leader of this Gen AI movement. So I'm super excited to have a conversation with Naveen today. Naveen, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your role here at Cognizant?
Happy to do that, Deb, and thank you for having me on. So my role at Cognizant, I think I have the best job in the firm. My role at Cognizant is to make sure that our clients get the most out of their data and analytics and AI investments. Been in the firm for a little over 15 years, and I'm very proud to be a part of the team that's called AI and Analytics, because that's what we do for our clients. We deliver value for our clients through their investments in the data stack, making sure that extends to analytics, and then more and more over the last 4 to 5 years, just helping them double down on their spend and the value realization that they get from artificial intelligence.
Great. Well, there's no better time to be in that field for sure. So Gen AI is all the buzz these days, but AI isn't new. So what's really new here?
Yeah, AI isn't new. And one of the things that I love telling people, right? The very first time that the concept of a neural network was described was in 1943. Think of that for a second, right? 1943, no one thinks of AI in those terms. But where we are today, like you said, AI is not new. AI has been around for a while. What is new is what happened in November of 2022 when OpenAI introduced ChatGPT. It sort of just blew the socks off this whole thing, right? Everyone got a chance to actually play with AI and play with a version of AI that frankly hadn't existed for a long time. The underlying technology that powers a lot of generative AI came out of a tech paper from 2017. So, you know, a concept, an idea that was introduced in 2017 that was then realized and opened to the public in 2022. And here we are, right? So 15, 16 months later, and nearly every conversation we have with clients, be it the business stakeholders, be it the IT stakeholders, be it the functional leaders, and more be it the boards of the clients that we work with, those conversations invariably have a large part of the conversation parked for generative AI and its impact and how can we realize value and how can we get better at what we're doing. So all of those things are happening now. What's new about this wave of AI is the fact that it isn't constrained. Previous generations of AI have always been trained on very narrow applications. Machine learning is a more apt description of what the previous generations were able to do. What we're now able to see with generative AI is that these super complicated, super large models that are trained on billions of parameters are then able to start creating content. And the content can be words, the content can be images, the content can be audio files, the content now can be video files. These models are able to start generating content in areas that they haven't necessarily been specifically trained on. So we went from having a very narrow and a linear thing with machine learning to having this really broad stroke of AI that can come in and look at what is the context within which a question was asked, and then answer the question without necessarily having been trained on it?
Clearly, we're seeing this hit the masses. And this particular audience that we're talking to today is targeted at tech companies. So what are you seeing tech companies do using AI?
I think tech companies are, by definition, right? They're the closest to where this technology is. They're the keenest on learning about it. And they're also very, very excited about the potential. I think I've seen a couple of broad themes, right? There are still companies that are looking at this to say, well, this is great, but how is it going to help me improve my bottom line? How can I apply this to be more efficient? How can I take out some of the friction that sits within my systems, my processes, my product, and use Gen AI to actually smoothen out that. So there is definitely a cohort of companies that are looking at this to improve their efficiencies. I think the more forward-leaning companies, the more future-looking companies are looking at this to say, you know, how do I take this and create capabilities that my consumers, my end clients have been asking for a long time, and I've just never found a good cost-effective way of doing it. And I'll use the example of a CRM platform, right? If you look at CRM platforms are wonderful at tracking the actual back and forth on any transaction. What did the sales rep do? What are the client's response? What were the activities that were taken? Those transactions that happened, the back and forth, is a very coachable set of transactions. And yet, companies that have produced those CRM platforms have always looked at this to say, well, the coaching is going to come from the manager of the sales rep. The coaching, it will come with experience. The coaching will come with time. Fast forward to where we are now. Companies are saying, well, yes, the coaching can still come from a manager, can still come with experience, can come from a more seasoned mentor. But there's really nothing that stops these firms from now embedding an AI coach into a CRM platform to teach, you know, and really act as that co-pilot. Microsoft really hit the branding on that perfectly. To act as a co-pilot for these reps to help them be more effective. So when this co-pilot or this generative AI coach sees a rep do something that it thinks could have been done better, the AI is able to provide feedback in real time. That's capability that didn't exist before, you know, or if it did, it would have cost an arm and a leg to embed down to each sales rep. So that's one example, right? Net new capabilities that haven't existed that are now being brought in. We see this in other places as well. Every company that services a large set of customers ends up running a contact center. It doesn't matter if you're a tech company or if you're an airline or a hotel. You end up having a help desk, an 800 number that people call into. Typically, the folks that answer those calls will follow a script. They're limited to what the script provides them, and they're limited to that one view that they see on the screen. So it's not uncommon if you walk into a help desk to see these contact center agents doing the swivel chair, right? Monitor one, turn to monitor two, turn to monitor three, try and piece the story together. One of the more creative applications we've seen with generative AI is actually helping these contact center agents in real time. So there's a better looking version of Microsoft Clippy appears on your screen and tells you where you're going, tells you things that you may not have picked up, such as the tone of the conversation. What are the words that the caller is using? What is the sentiment they're expressing? Given the sentiment, given the prior history of transactions or engagements, where do we think this conversation could go? So all of those are capabilities that haven't existed before, right? So really just brand new capabilities that are being brought closer to employees, closer to associates, closer to the end users that can help move that proverbial needle further. I think those are some of the more creative applications that we're seeing of AI within tech companies.
Yeah, I mean, every software company that I deal with is certainly embedding AI within their products. And it's interesting. I'm hoping that the agent assist, if you will, gives all of us a better experience when we have to interact with the contact center. But on the sales front, one of my clients actually built a sales engine, AI engine, that helps to write an email for the customer based upon where they are in the stage of the sales cycle or what existing support tickets may be outstanding, and really helping the salesperson to make their interactions with the customers much more relevant.
No one calls the contact center to share their joy of experiencing service. You know, no one calls the contact center because they're happy. They always call because there is some problem, some complaint. If we do this right, you can actually use that negative trigger of someone calling in with a complaint to go to a place where not a lot of companies have gone. You can take the capabilities that AI brings, solve the problem quickly. And now that you've actually introduced an element of delight, I've fixed a problem that would have previously taken five conversations and three letters or whatever else that medium is. And now I've solved it for you because I, the contact center agent, have a bigger view and I can see what's going on. And now that you've introduced that positive tone into that conversation, you actually have a better chance of using that interaction to convert it into an uplift conversation. So we're seeing this with a very large communications provider that's in all sorts of communication layers. And when customers call in with a complaint, priority number one, right? It is that P0 ticket. So priority one, priority zero, whichever way you look at it, solving the problem. But once you've solved the problem, and if you've done it well, you now have the ability to have a conversation on, well, the equipment that you've been using is approaching end of life and we can help you upgrade it. Or we think that there's a better plan that you can move on to that'll actually save you money. So those kinds of conversations that typically have not happened because the experiences that we've become used to have always been disconnected and disjoint, with AI bringing all of these things together and accelerating that resolution moment, I think all of those are things that are now within our reach.
You know, it's interesting because as you talk about the history of AI and you talk about these use cases, it seems to me that really the Gen AI buzz is really helping to accelerate adoption of AI and that technology will accelerate as well because customers are seeing ways to deploy that within their organization. Would you agree with that?
I think that's absolutely a fair assessment. Up until 2 years, 3 years ago, if you had to interact with AI, you had to go through this learning curve. You had to go through a set of people, the chosen ones that were data scientists that could speak the language that a computer needed to be programmed in. What is different about today's capabilities is the fact that, I don't know that we've eliminated that, but we've certainly simplified a lot of those conversations. So you can ask questions in the way that you and I are having this conversation using the same language, same words. You can ask questions and get answers in that same manner. That's a huge leap forward from where we were 3 years ago. You could have gotten the same kinds of answers earlier, but just the process itself was so filled with friction and handoffs that not a lot of companies went down that path. That, I think, is one of the biggest benefits of how this generation of AI models has actually achieved so much, so high of a deployment rate so quickly, because it makes it easy to access this information.
Yeah, absolutely. So this podcast series is really about product engineering and helping those organizations to bring some of the best practices that we have and what some of our clients have. So how does this Gen AI or AI wave impact product engineering?
It's something that I think is going to change product engineering fundamentally. And if I think about where product engineering starts, it starts off at the ideation and the concept phase. Using generative AI, you can use those models to actually speed up that generation process. So if you've got a concept or a design or an idea, you can quickly stand that up. The creativity that's needed in these sorts of situations is frankly unlimited now. You used to be dependent on having the right set of creative skills in the room, communicating what you need to those creative folks, and then always being limited by the experience of those creative folks. I think those creative folks will never go away. Their experience, in some sense, becomes even more valuable. But now, with generative AI, you actually can accelerate that whole ideation process. So that very first step of thinking of what am I trying to build becomes faster. You take that to the next step, the prototyping, the iteration, the ability to create visualizations and mockups and do user testing, all of those things become faster. The user experience design becomes interesting. So today we're used to, you have to remember, our starting point is we deal with computers through a layer. The operating system, the applications that run on it are the layers with which we deal with computers. So every time you onboard a new employee, and if you've got a computer system, there's that step of teaching or training the employee on what your computer systems are. Fast forward to where we are now and where I think the future is headed. If we eliminate this layer, if the interactions become as natural as the conversation that you and I are having, then the need to train, the need to actually build a system and think about UX as a separate element starts to become very different from how we view it today. This can be very interesting, right? Think about where the future can go. One of the things that retailers are now struggling with is if the order is going to be triggered by AI and fulfilled by AI, you essentially have two AI systems talking to each other. What is the consumer interface in that world? One of the things we're working on is review of legal documents. And if you think about, you know, legal documents are by their very nature, they're meant to be risk minimizing tools. So everything is spelled out in great detail, which actually helps AI systems. We've now got the ability to take a contract, a legal document, and bubble up what are the outliers. And the next step in this is actually training this AI agent to take these outliers and start to communicate with what could potentially be an AI agent on the other side. So that's another example of where the communication and therefore the actual user interaction, the user experience, will have to be rethought as we bring Gen AI more and more into this. There's also the day-to-day work, right? So this is not all future-facing stuff. In today's world, the productivity jump that comes from AI, be it in writing code, be it in testing code, be it in documenting code, be it in all of those things that no one wants to do. Sometimes reverse engineering code that was written 20, 30, 50 years ago. And now the people that wrote it are no longer around. And therefore, it's hard to understand and therefore hard to refactor or rewrite. All of those are things that generative AI is capable of doing today. So really, such a wide and an endless palette of opportunities here, of things that can be done in a product engineering stack once you start to bring Gen AI into your workflow.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's going to transform that whole product lifecycle. And it sounds to me as well for the engineering audience, the opportunity to really focus on the creative parts of product engineering and let the AI engine do some of the nitty-gritty work to support that. And then also, it just obviously could help accelerate time to market, which will continue to accelerate then innovation in the business.
That's exactly right. And, you know, one of the things that some leaders in the space, right, Jensen Huang from NVIDIA talks about this. He talks about how we spent all of the time up until now teaching people how to program because that was the only way to communicate with a computer. Where we are now, the communication language, if that is English, then do you really have to spend all that energy in learning how to program? Now, I'm not sure we're there yet, but directionally, I think he's absolutely right. This is where we're headed. So that's something that we need to think about as we think about the future of product engineering, as we think about the future of providing these capabilities onto an audience. Our user bases are not getting more patient. No one says, oh, I'll wait 30 seconds when I used to wait 5. So how do you bring those new capabilities faster than ever before to an audience that's gotten used to speed, that's gotten used to communicating in very natural language to their devices?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. As a computer science major who did assembly language programming and then found the benefits of object-oriented programming, we're really taking this to the absolute next level. So that really resonated with me.
We are.
Other than the engineering part of the product lifecycle, what are some of the other use cases, you know, maybe documentation or you mentioned support?
So one of the other things that I'm seeing a lot of companies do is really just thinking about what are the things that have traditionally required a fair bit of human labor, human capital to be applied to it. Things like reviewing documents. You know, we spoke about how legal contracts are now starting to be reviewed with AI. Now, it's not all sunshine and roses yet. I'm sure everyone in the audience or some of you in the audience have heard about instances where a lawyer went into court with a ChatGPT generated filing that referenced cases that didn't exist. So it's not all sunshine and roses. But the good news is, for the most part, this technology is very good at doing what it's supposed to do. So anything where you have a large amount of text to be summarized, that text could be code that was written in COBOL 50 years ago. That text could be documentation that was written, or more often than not, code that was written that doesn't have any documentation. That text generation capabilities of building out test cases, of building out edge cases that you can now start to quickly run testing on. All of those are capabilities. I'll spend a little bit of time on the testing part of this. What's interesting about this new world is up until now, everything that we've done has always been very deterministic, right? There was an input. You wrote a set of instructions, and then there was an output. In this new world, as models evolve, the inputs will change, the models will learn, and therefore the expectation that the outputs can change over time is something that we all have to start to reconcile ourselves with. That requires for a whole new way of thinking. That requires for a whole new way of building out your own software engineering organizations. It really makes the need for ongoing testing. It highlights the need to do that on an ongoing basis. And maybe testing isn't even the word. Maybe it's just validating what these models are producing on an ongoing basis. So those are some of the bigger things that companies, I think, are going to have to start to think about as the impact of this becomes more and more understood and accepted in our world.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know for one of our clients, we've applied AI to generate test cases, and we've been able to improve productivity by 30% doing that. So definitely a big opportunity there. And I have another customer who's used Gen AI to help in translation of documentation into multiple languages. So lots of use cases for product departments or product engineering groups to be thinking about.
We've got a healthcare client that gets a lot of these complicated health plan requirements that come in a Word document. we've now got the ability to actually take that Word document, extract the business rules, and then create a configuration file that can be applied to the system. So what used to be a very manual process is someone actually, and I've seen this, so I know it's true, printing a document, sitting with a highlighter, coloring all the business rules that needed to be extracted and coded and tested and then deployed. We've been able to bring this high degree of automation into it. The AI agent reads the document. The AI agent creates the configuration file. The AI agent applies it, tests it. You still have a human in the loop. We're not at a stage where health plans are being configured completely by AI. So you still have humans making sure that things are going right. But just think of that as an example, right? The acceleration in the productivity bump that you get in that situation, it is mind-blowing.
Absolutely. So as you said, it's not all rainbows and sunshine. Obviously, there's some risks associated with this new technology. And one of those is security, right? So the risk that bad actors are going to do things with AI that's going to create security threats. How should we be thinking about that?
It's a very real risk, right? I'm an optimist. I like to start with the good news. The good news is, unlike previous technologies, you know, when social media came on the scene, no one was talking about, oh, what are the side effects of social media we should be thinking about?
Yeah.
Unlike that sort of a thing, with AI, there is a tremendous amount of scrutiny and a tremendous amount of focus being put on, you know, what is responsible AI? What is that set of ethical guidelines within which AI models should be trained and AI models should be used? So that is a step in the right direction. I'm not going to tell you, you know, that we can take our eye off the ball, but it's something that I think is moving in the right direction. Having said that, it is something that everyone should keep their eye on. There's the need to make sure that you're not training your models on proprietary or sensitive data that can then leak back into the world. So keeping your data secure becomes important. The model itself, you know, if you're using an open source model, that's fine. If you're using a model that's been fine-tuned, you are now creating another layer of IP that traditionally companies haven't built. And I don't know that everyone's thought through how do you manage and govern this additional layer of intellectual property, your fine-tuning, your context, your domain. How do you actually track that and how do you protect yourself appropriately with this? The need for monitoring the output. Everyone's heard about hallucinations and, you know, somewhat cute to call it a hallucination, but it's something that is very real. It's something that, you know, if you don't put the appropriate checks and balances in place, and sometimes that can be a human in the loop, making sure that the output is making sense and isn't leading us down a path that the recovery is going to be impossible to get to. I think that is going to be key. So monitoring that output and having someone assess the output, it remains key. That's not going away. There's a couple of other things to think about. You brought up the example of, you know, accelerating developer productivity. That's great. How do you make sure that the code that AI generates isn't going to land you in a situation where someone shows up a year from now and says, I had the copyright on that and there you've used it and therefore now you're liable for it. So that's one thing to keep an eye out for. The other part is this code is being generated, and if the code base that it was trained on had some sort of a security issue, well, then the code that's going to be generated could potentially have the same set of security issues. So being aware of where your code comes from, being aware of where your models are, what they've been trained on, where they're deployed, and then having that real-time kill switch, if you will. If we find a problem, how do we stop this very quickly? I think those are all going to become things that companies have to start thinking about.
Yeah, very comprehensive approach to how you apply this technology. So we've talked a lot about AI, Gen AI, and different applications, but underlying all of this requires a quality data structure. It's all dependent upon the underlying data. And so what are you seeing as innovation in the area of database technology?
Database technology is moving really rapidly to address this, and you're right. You cannot have a good AI strategy unless you have a good data strategy. So the starting point very much is data. And the data estate is complex. Today's data estate in terms of complexity is probably 10 times what it was even in 2013. So the last 10 years, the complexity has grown tremendously. Specific to databases, one of the big things that we're seeing is the introduction and the adoption of vector databases. And this is a technology that's been around for a while. So the key things that it allows AI and Gen AI to do is things like similarity search. Vector databases are optimized for similarity searches. So when you're looking for things that are similar or that are closest to a query, these databases are able to find it very quickly. these databases are also optimized for very highly dimensional data. The traditional database, it can handle multiple dimensions, of course, but it's been one of those models where the more dimensions you add, the more load the database engine takes on, performance starts to take a hit. And I think this is one of those areas where vector databases shine because they're specifically designed to handle high dimensional data. They're designed to handle it well. So that's good. There's work that happens on real-time processing. The newer generation of these databases, they're built for things like instantaneous indexing. It isn't a separate activity that happens. So all of those are capabilities that are happening within the core database layer itself, the engineering layer itself. In addition to that, how information is accessed and shared is also changing. So there's a couple of things in there. One, the integration with AI pipelines, that's becoming more and more of a norm. But then the ability to extract information is also changing. You know, the traditional capability of writing SQL and retrieving answers, that remains. A lot of tooling out there that helps you do it better. But what we're seeing the market head to is this ability to ask a question in English and get answers. And these answers are not necessarily limited to text. These answers can be graphs, they can be visuals. I mean, there's tools that'll even create a slide deck for you so you can take it to your boss. If the question that's being asked is, why is your performance in Q1 not as good as your performance in Q4? Well, here's a compare. Here's an answer. Here's graphs. Here's the factors. And then here's the recommendations that the AI engine makes. Now, I'm not going to tell you that everyone should follow those recommendations, but that's where those capabilities are going, right? It surfaces the recommendations for a human to start to look at and then go deeper with it.
Wow, lots to think about. I was just thinking about where that application was so I could prepare that presentation. Great. Well, this whole wave of technology innovation reminds me of transformations we saw around e-business when everything had to be e, and then cloud, everything had to be cloud. But this could be even bigger. How do you think this will change business?
If you look at those two instances, e-business and cloud, they both went in with an IT-first mindset. The whole e-business premise was we will take your existing processes and we'll optimize them and we'll give you tooling that helps you execute your process faster. The cloud premise, I mean, cloud actually started off as, you know, we'll help you scale faster, but oh, by the way, we'll help you get off your data center and, you know, all those boxes that you're not using, we'll make sure that they're used productively. So they both somewhat started off in the IT space. Obviously, right? You cannot minimize the impact that they created for general productivity for businesses. The whole e-business wave, the ERP platforms, the resulting applications, things like those of us that worked back in the day on platforms like Siebel and all those others, we know what those platforms brought to the table. They help processes become standard. They help people see what the impact of their decision was in somewhat real time. And created the outputs in a manner that you could consume quickly. Cloud took that to the next level. It removed the fixed expense and brought up this whole new set of applications, brand new SaaS applications where the application wasn't static. The application could be upgraded in the background, new capabilities introduced. You paid for what you used. That's the premise. That is the promise as well. And then you can obviously go further from there. Where this wave is different is generative AI is not leading with the technology-first mindset. There's complex, extremely complex technology behind this. But where it's leading with is, what do humans do and how can we either make that better or in some cases replace that with a lower cost way of doing things? So there is that factor for sure. And the unsaid piece of this is the ability to scale up quickly. Humans are wonderful at what we do. Our ability to process information that's complex, that's disparate, and bring it all together and synthesize is wonderful. But we are also limited by scale. The thing about these technologies is they can scale infinitely. So you no longer have to think, oh, well, where am I going to find those 50 developers, those 50 engineers, those 100 contact center agents? Now it's more about how do I build this model so it scales? And the people that I have can start to do the work, can start to produce the output of those 50 developers, of those 50 contact center agents and testers and so on. So I think that is the fundamental difference with this technology. It's a business first, outcome first way of looking at things, as opposed to the last two waves that you spoke about.
Yeah, the other benefit AI has is it doesn't sleep at night and take vacations. So that also brings a productivity gain. But, you know, if you look back on it, right, the e-business wave really created a category of e-commerce and the ability for people to transact and purchase things online. And then the cloud wave, as you described, right, it created this whole subscription economy that allowed organizations and customers to interact in a different manner. So what do you think the new categories or new areas that may emerge that technology companies could take advantage of with this new trend?
We're still in the early stages, right? So let's just set the ground on this one a little bit. I've seen and read articles that compare AI to the invention of steam, refrigeration, things of that scale. The reason those compares make sense is there was no Coca-Cola company that existed when refrigeration was first introduced. Coca-Cola company showed up later, right? So you first had this ability to refrigerate products and do it at industrial scale. And then humanity, or very smart people in humanity, invented this brand new category. I think AI is going to go down that same path. We're going to go down this path of having AI native firms that come up on the scene. Now, it's different than what we saw with the digital natives. The digital natives that came up on the scene about 10 or 12 years ago took existing processes and said, how do we make it better with the digital first mindset? I think the AI native companies are going to look at these processes completely whiteboard stage and say, how would I do this today? And there's going to be a wide variety of those. It's hard to sit here right now in March of 2024 and predict what those 3 or 5 or 10 are going to be there, but I fundamentally do believe this technology is transformative enough that it's going to launch its own new category. We're starting to see some signs. We're starting to see these signs. What Khan Academy does with KhanMigo, essentially having a personalized tutor that accompanies you on your learning journey. One of the things that we've toyed around at Cognizant, when we bring in an employee and we assign them from one project to another, they're going through their own learning curve. They're picking up things. Can we create an AI companion that actually lives with them throughout their journey at Cognizant, watches how they code, watches the kinds of things that they're interested in, helps them shape their career and helps them get to that maturity level quickly? Over time, obviously, this sort of an agent learns, and we think could also potentially become a counterbalance. So if I work at Cognizant and I've now had this virtual companion that knows me and what I want to do and how I do it, and over 3 to 5 years gathers this information, then that's a pretty compelling reason for me to remain at Cognizant. So there's these kinds of things that, you know, we are all starting to think and see in the world. So that's where the art of the possible will come in. I do believe this is an area where we're going to see a large number of companies that come up with things that haven't been done up until now. It's kind of easy to take what's been done and optimize it. I think the really powerful ones are going to be the ones that are very creative and come up with net new categories.
I think that's a very interesting use case. And it just leads me to ask the question. I know Cognizant is making a $1 billion investment in AI. What are some of the things we can do to help companies with all of the various areas that you've described here?
I think one of the things that we do for our clients really is just bring our own experiences, right? Our experiences within the firm and our experiences with clients to them. And then we get the ideation going. Now, what we've also done, we recently announced an advanced AI lab. It's really a bunch of core, heavy-duty AI-focused researchers that are focused on moving the needle further. There's the work that we do within our AI studios where we bring in clients and go through ideation sessions. We talk about what others in their situation, in their industry, with some of their constraints have done. We show them what these assets that are powered by AI look like. And the thought is that we get that old-fashioned creative juice going, right? So we now help these companies start to think about doing things differently. Those are all things that we do for our clients. And I think that's really the best thing we can do, right? We can take our experiences, our lessons learned, and bring them quickly to our clients. And once we get alignment on the problem we're trying to solve, from that point on, it becomes a little bit of business as AI would make it usual. We go back in and we very quickly prototype. We very quickly turn around and show the results. And then we scale it up. So I think that's how we help our clients.
Terrific. Well, this has been a very interesting conversation, and I'm sure our audience is getting a lot of value out of it. What are your final thoughts? The good, the bad, the ugly. What are your final thoughts and advice for people listening today?
I think that this is a very exciting space. It's also a fast-moving space. You said this earlier, I am very optimistic about the overall impact this will have on our worlds, our careers, our day-to-day lives, the interactions we have with our fellow humans, machines, systems, all of those things, right? I think this makes it all better. It is going to be, as with the introduction of any new technology, it's going to be one where people that bring creativity and a willingness to flex are going to get the most value out of it. So I think that's the biggest thing that I would ask people to take away. Be creative about this. Be open about this. This is a space where it's very easy to do rapid experiments. It's very easy to end up with a good or a bad result. So be willing to experiment quickly. Take what works for you and scale it cautiously. And what doesn't work, you know, there's always lessons to be learned and why it didn't work. Examine it, but go forward with it. But the one thing I would ask everyone to do is do not be shy about this. If there's one way of losing this battle, it's by not engaging in it. So if there's anything you can do to engage in it, I think you're already going to be ahead of those that chose not to.
Great. So get started, experiment, and learn is what I'm hearing. And then you can scale. Great. All right. Well, Naveen, thank you again so much for your time today. It was a great conversation. I know I learned a lot. Hopefully others did as well. And look forward to seeing you out there with clients.
Thank you, Deb. This was so much fun.
A big thank you to our guest, Naveen Sharma. It was great to get his insight into the evolving landscape of AI technology. And thank you all for joining us on this edition of Powering Product Innovation from Cognizant. If you've enjoyed the show, please be sure to rate us, leave us a review, and hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. I'm Deb Eastman, and thanks for listening.